just over in glory land, we'll reach eternally. The same stars that we had is shouting victory. The song of sweetest praise just back from heaven's door. And I can't feel at home in this world anymore.
November 30th, it's Mint Records' ridiculously early Christmas party at the Ukrainian Hall, featuring Jay Arner, Tough Age, Nardwar and the Evaporators, Rennie Wilson, The Ramble Ambassadors, Fake Tears, Sean Morasic Lives, and more. Tickets available at Red Cat Zulu or on brownpapertickets.com.
The Late Night Show is music from the underground jungle and drum bass music. A quick beat tempo that smooths into the night. Later, as it winds down, it gets to your senses that it can finally calm the nerves and relax and drifts away with industrial noise and alternative no beat tempo into another dimension. Tune in every Friday night, Saturday early mornings from midnight till 6 a.m. for the Late Night Show with DJ Ray here on UBC Campus Radio, CITR 101.9 FM. And catch the following broadcasts of the TZN Global Network, heard Saturdays from 6 to 7 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
I am a serious rhythm machine. Now try pleasure. www.citr.ca. You win. CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
CITR presents DJing 101.9. We offer people a way to learn about the fun of mixing, sharing music, and throwing events. Our workshops and studio access is free for students and members. No experience or turntables are necessary. Workshops from 4 to 8 p.m. are on Tuesdays in 212A in the Student Union Building at UBC. For more information, visit us at citr.ca or follow at CITRDJ on Twitter.
One campus, one station, over 40 live broadcasts. Tune in every weekend as CITR provides live coverage of UBC varsity sports. With over 40 live internet and radio broadcasts in men's and women's hockey, basketball, and volleyball, CITR is your voice for Thunderbird athletics.
Takes on the University of Lethbridge in their first of two weekend games before the winter break.
Good afternoon, touch squeak. It's Utla. Come on in, all you folks, come on in. Welcome to Language to Language here at CITR 101.9 FM in the very, very heart of the Musqueam unceded territory here in the northeastern Pacific. You know, people get confused when I say that, northeastern Pacific coast, because they look at the world from the west, from the east, and so they think this is the west, but we're the eastern Pacific. So welcome to the shores of the northeastern Pacific, the beautiful Musqueam territory. And thank you to the Musqueam people for permitting us to work, play, do our work, and enjoy this beautiful territory of your unceded territory. Well, today's the first our first show, and my co-host isn't here. Thanks to the construction going on, she's stuck somewhere down on the Burrard Street Bridge. But we're very, very fortunate that we have a guest here today that I really don't know very much about him, so I'm going to have to get him to tell us a whole bunch of stuff about him, and I can't contradict him because I don't know any better. So, in English, I'll give you my Haida name first. Kaunsanga Hinodikya Ang, Kachakas Diokwal Agn. Chatlanas hat io aging. Dr. Woodrow Morrison BAJD hino di aad hat ai kilt ge ang. Di au cha ang hino hat kilt Virginia cloud hino maiden name guy. Laga hidan wagyan di hung Hansen Hansenan Woodrow Morrison senior kyagan is gan glad di hat ai kilt ge ang. So in Haida my name is Clown Singa. In English everybody calls me Woody. I'm of the eagle moiety of the Haida Nation, and my crest is the eagle with two heads, Atlanas. My mother's name was Chayang, and my father was La Dai. And I'm of the northern Haidas, Kis Hat Agn, Dik Is Hat Agn. I'm of the old people from Heidelberg, Alaska, but I've been living here in Vancouver now for... oh, since 1991, I guess it is. People say I raised the IQ of both places when I left Alaska and came here. But anyway, my guest here is Bo Dick, and so maybe you can introduce yourself in your own language and tell us where your territory is.
How atagung gela kasla ola gela ikidanology lemen seislogu nus gachen heilagwela gaelic hasla muskuium and again thank you for having me here today, Woody. I'll introduce myself as a Wallace Goyam amongst the Kwakwaka'wakw and Kwakwaka'wakw, that's right. The people who speak Kwakwala, and that's what we refer to ourselves as, Kwakwaka'wakw, otherwise known by ethnologists or anthropologists as Kwagyul or Kwakyudl. So that's my neighborhood at the north end of Vancouver Island, at Alert Bay, where I reside now, and connected to some of the villages that are in that vicinity. Also, I'll just share with you, my Haida name is Songet Ayas, and a name that I carry quite proudly. Have many connections with your nation amongst those at Haida Gwaii and Masset and Skidigit, so well acquainted with my family there. And that stems back a long ways back to connection that we have with a Tlingit ancestor chief, Sheikhs the Seventh, who had three daughters, the eldest of which was betrothed to Robert Hunt of the Hudson's Bay Company. And she and her husband moved to Port Rupert at the north end of Vancouver Island in the mid-1800s, when they opened a fort at Chakis, central village amongst the Kwakwaka'wakw.
You know, it's a sort of a curious thing. I found a book called Sea Otter Chiefs. And in that book, there in 1799, the book says that there was a Chief Sheikhs in Masset Inlet, that one lived there. And I kind of wonder, you know, people traded names, like the name Yeltatsi. That's a Tlingit name. Yelt it has something to do with a raven anyway. I won't say it on air. But anyway... But in that book in 1799, they referred to this Chief Yeltatsi was Haida at that time, as a bunch of them came to help Kamshiwa. You know, he was down there where around Skidigit area, and he and a guy named Ginawan were always fighting. So Ginawan decided he's going to finish it, so he sent up to the north to Alaska for relatives to come give him a hand. So they started down the east side of Haida Gwaii, and as they got close to Kamshiwa, here he come, but he had a Spanish gunboat with him. And anyway, so he was so incensed that the guy wasn't going to fight fair, he turned around and hit back and picked up everybody and moved across to Alaska. So he was the last one that moved to Alaska. It was 1799. So I thought it was curious, you know, about the name Chief Shakes.
Again, you know, there's been a concession of these bloodline. It does get, we are very interactive people, as you mm-hmm. know, and particularly prior to contact, as mm-hmm. we describe when colonialism started to take over our lives. But again, these names and are really much to do with hierarchy, I think, and the framework of these bloodlines that stem back to the beginning of time where Raven first brought light to the yeah. world, and at the headwaters of the Stikine amongst our Tahltan ancestors. So that's one of the movements in, mm-hmm. in history, that there's our people have always been interacting and on the move, sharing names, customs, tradition, and so on. So I think there we're a lot more connected yeah. than we realize for the most part.
You know, when you talk about, you know, how we moved a great deal, when the Europeans arrived, they assumed that we were all sitting there waiting to be discovered. We didn't go anywhere. But in 1620, I was reading that the Iroquois Confederacy people would walk from what's now New York. They would walk all the way to Mexico, which is Mexico, to visit with their relatives. And the last trip they made was in 1620. There was a Spanish priest there, and he recorded the things that were discussed. And Montezuma's nephew, a man named Cuauhtémoc, greeted them, and he, I guess you might say, he admonished them, told them to return home and to stop traveling, to take the things that are dearest to your hearts and conceal them in a secret place. Never sever your direct relationship with the power of the creating. And never give up your language, because that's where the knowledge will be concealed. And so they would go once every 6 years, and they walk kind of in a circle. And Mexico or Mexico was the ultimate destination. Then they would return back up along the Great Lakes and then back home. And that was in 1620. And what Cuauhtémoc said was that we're coming into the time of the dark sun. He said, this dark sun will bring death, confusion, destruction, and our world kind of be turned upside down. And it will last for approximately 9 hells. One hell is about 52 years. So this was supposed to last for 486 years before we start moving it back into the time of the new sun. So about that time in the 1960s is when our oral history said to start paying attention to the tide. When it begins to behave in a different manner, we're returning to the first cycle. So it was around the early 1960s when the ocean currents began to change. And so people begin remembering things. There's something like chakras, I guess. There's 7 of them. And they said of those 7, 5 would shut down completely during the time of the dark sun. 2 we would continue to use. 1 we'd use incompletely, the other would use incorrectly. Our intellect we'd use incompletely, our sexuality we'd use incorrectly. And as we come into the time of the new sun, these other 5 would begin to reactivate. And one of them permits us to remember everything we've learned as human beings since we came into being. So people are going to start knowing things without somebody telling them, and they'll understand without being explained. And so when we got into the new age, we had people talking about harmonics and all sorts of things because they didn't have a language that could describe the images they're receiving. And also the colors. They were stuck with European notions of primary colors, red being anger, blue being sad, black being evil, yellow being cowardice, green being envy, and white being death. whereas ours are all life colors. And then when their music came out, it was just all these tinkly, pretty raindrop sounds, but the heartbeat wasn't there. You know, the mother's heartbeat. Now, that's all you can hear. Dum, 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 dum. So they've gone completely the other way. So anyway, I thought maybe these were some of the things you were reacting to when you say these are dangerous times.
Well, this is very interesting, this cross-connectedness. And when you begin to describe a part of this connectedness, it brought to mind the travel of our neighbors to the south, who apparently are Athapascan origin, as we are partly too, and they ended up being Apache and Navajos, and they too are very in touch in a spiritual sense. And but I find this intriguing. I didn't know some of these details that you're sharing. And it just makes perfect sense to me, of course. Mm-hmm. And as you've described the shamanistic metaphysical equilibrium that mm-hmm. is hard to describe, is coming to light, that people are becoming more aware in this age of consciousness, as it were. These are dangerous times. This is a statement that I made recently when my family and I walked from our homeland on the north end of Vancouver Island down to Victoria to the legislature building to break our family copper, a tradition that's sort of been subdued as our culture became dismantled by the onslaught of modernism and a lot of those old values and mindsets were left behind, and our connectedness as well. So it was a gesture, if you will, to bring attention to issues that we have. And when I talk about dangerous times, mm-hmm. that's on many levels. Uh-huh. We've become disconnected not only with Mother Earth and nature collectively. Our people don't even know our backyards for the most part. Sometimes it's interesting that we may lay claim to our territory because we do feel some connectedness to it, mm-hmm. but we're losing it. And the same with our connectedness, of course, through our spirituality and our customs in terms of ceremony. Attempts nowadays to reconstruct it and fix it and put it back together is very challenging. So we're in danger of becoming extinct in a sense that we lose our identity and as First Nations. So, but I see hope that there are those that are strong and healed and begin to be empowered with this vision of reparation and of the seven generations later is starting to appear. And I'm hopeful and I feel somewhat confident, but at the same time, we have to be careful, and our values are twisted, and that's something we have to admit, and that's dangerous too, that if we continue in the direction that we go collectively, that we'll end up paying the consequence. That's my belief, and that's why I say these are dangerous times, and there's a lot to be said about that.
You know, the old timers, my teachers, would say, remember the future, because they told us what was going to happen. And then this connectedness you say about the Dene people or Athabascan, we call all the Athabascan-speaking peoples in Haida, we call them Tsak Hat'ai. Tsak is the bald eagle, because before the ice, that eagle wasn't here in the Eastern Pacific. We had a giant black bird, and I think that was a giant condor. But when the ice came, it left. And then everybody moved south, but some of us stayed. And then after the ice left and people started moving north, that bald eagle came with them. And so that's where we got the word Tsok from, was from the Dene people. So all the people all the way down to northern Mexico, I guess we would call all of them eagle people, because it's all one family of languages. And so I think we have a responsibility to teach this history to these young ones so they know how we're connected. And those cultural values you're talking about, we separated the concept of money from wealth. Money is personal power. Wealth is responsibility to share. And you find that people with lots of money, they don't want to share with anybody. But poor people that don't have much money, they share with everybody. You go to their houses, come on, have something to eat. These other people look down their nose at you, you know.
Well, again, you know, you pointed out something very profound. I mean, our people are accustomed to accommodating that feeling of generosity and sharing, and we have a philosophy of give, give, give. And we're now taken over by another force that has a different attitude that takes, takes, takes. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're faced with. And again, getting back to dangerous times, this is the situation.
You know, in our ancient history, we call Tlaug Egang. I'm telling the story of all the humans. It tells of a time when the medicine people knew that something was going to happen and told the people to get ready. So they knew how to dry food at that time and started moving things into caves on the side of a mountain. But as they were doing it, this medicine person stopped them and said, I need to warn you. When you start accumulating things or amassing things, you have to be careful, because if you're not, this worm is going to get in your mind and create a need for stuff you don't need. And if that happens, you become skuju or skauju. That means you start grabbing. It's not a hunger. It's not greed. Greed is just a value judgment. It just means you can't stop grabbing. You start believing that you can never have too much. And so to guard against it, we always had to give something back. It doesn't mean if I take a cup from over there that I replace it. What it really referred to is say we're hungry. We're all hungry. We're looking for food. Animal presents itself, or fish or something else. We say, we're going to give you back. We're not going to take this first one. We'll always give that one back. So we always give back that first one, no matter how hungry we are. In this way, we're guaranteeing that the generation following us is always going to have something. But this money one, you got to take everything, because, you know, that's money. You know, that's personal power. And so when we get oriented into making money, I don't really see anything wrong with money, because I can use it for some things. But a few years ago, I didn't want to go that way. It was when they had the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. I was right there. I was right in there with all of them, and I just said, I don't want anything to do with this. Many of them ended up with huge bank accounts. I don't care. That's not what I wanted to do. And so when I heard about you, I heard you were putting up a poll and you're doing this commemoration for those Haidas that died of smallpox in your territory. I thought to myself, now this is a person I want to meet. And it took a long time, but finally you presented yourself. And I got a chance to meet you. So when I watched your YouTube, when you were talking about dangerous times, I wonder how many of them actually realize how many different levels or that there are many, many different levels to what you're saying. Because it's not just the climate change, but what are we doing to each other? You know? And I see that the residential school system is alive and well here. They keep taking our kids, and they do the same things to them. They don't teach the kids our language, our history, nothing. They just stick them in these foster homes. And I watch that. I work down at VacFest, and I see a social worker delivering a child. Sometimes the child will run to the parent. Other times they start acting out anger and a whole bunch of things, and immediately they want to deal with them. And I said, leave that kid alone. I told him that because that kid is lonesome. That kid feels that he did something wrong and wants to know somebody cares. Most of the thing, the best you can do with that child is be with him. You don't have to go over and do a whole bunch of stuff. When that child is ready, it'll let you know. But don't be afraid to touch them. So many parents won't touch their kids.
It's sad. You know, it's interesting subject now. I have friends that work for child services, child protection services, informed me that in the late 70s that there was over 60% of the children that were in the care of the services were First Nations in the early 70s.
Well, it's even more now.
That's what I'm getting to now. It's over 70% in the upper 70s. It's an interesting predicament. How does that occur? Is it just the growth of the population? Or is something missing? And I think it might be a little bit of both. And
it's the same with the prison population. Native people make up about 80% of the prison population and maybe 2% of the total population, something like that.
Some might have an attitude that it's their own fault, that they're lazy and that they're drunk or stupid, you know, but they don't fit into society. And
no.
What they're born into is very confusing. And this culture shock is still occurring. Cultural genocide that I mentioned is still occurring. We're still under attack. That's hard to wrap your head around. And you mentioned the money, how we've become so dependent on it, and how the band office system is run on money, and it's an extension of the corrupted Indian Act enforcing that upon us, and our own people become our worst enemy. And that seems like a harsh, brutal statement, but I had to sit and think about it for quite a while before I realized that it was true. And I could get into detail, but that would take some conversation, considerable time to discuss it all. There's a lot of aspects to that, from housing to language to education, health care. You know, I can go on and on, as First Nations, yes, underprivileged backgrounds, yes, and living to some degree in poverty and without any real opportunities to attain real success and be empowered to control our own destiny in our lives as First Nations and as individuals.
You know, when you talk about dangerous times, we've just come through over 150 years of children being taken away and sexually, well, raped and sodomized and beaten, tortured, killed. And then they expect us to behave in what's known as a rational or sane manner. And we've been doing this over in the Middle East now. Look at how many populations over there of children have been so totally brutalized by watching their land getting blown up, to watching their families getting shot, blown up, killed. But nobody even talks about what happened to the environment, too. All those animals and those birds and things out there, all that depleted uranium. And then here we've got, I just heard that they up there on the Athabasca River, a berm or something broke, and all his tailings or something flowed into the river. It's going to all end up in Lake Athabasca. And so we have all these things happening, and it's happening all over the world. It's not just with us, because somebody wants something that belongs to somebody else. And that's what, when I first read that story about Adam and Eve, about they were ashamed because they were naked. And I thought to myself, what's wrong with them? The only one can see them is the one who created them, God. Did God really screw up that badly? But also, when they tell the story of the serpent that convinced Eve to do the wrong thing, to bring sin into the world, I thought to myself, they don't know our history. They don't know about Tlaloc Egong, about the warning about that worm. And so what happened to that serpent was that worm got into their minds and created a need for something they didn't need. They didn't need clothing. But what came out of that is they start grabbing, and they can't stop grabbing because I've asked people, how much money is too much? And they have no idea. You can never have too much. And so that's what's driving everything, and that's what all wars are fought over. You got something I want, I'm going to take it if I have to kill you, even if I don't want it. I still got to take it. And so when you have that phenomenon worldwide, people ask me, is there a word in Haida for peace? I said, no, because we don't have a term for war. We have a term that means of armed skirmish, but war, the one that they was brought to us was unconditional surrender, which means I've got to totally dominate and conquer my enemies. And so if you have that concept, the other side of the coin is peace, because nothing is made with only one side. But we still live in peace. Peace isn't the absence of fighting. Peace is when you finally establish some balance rather than, I don't know, it's sometimes I get so frustrated thinking about these things. Maybe I shouldn't think about them. I don't know. What do you think about it?
About balance and
warfare.
Well, I know what you're saying. I totally agree with you. I mean, you've said so much in this brief statement. I continue to learn from you. This whole idea of conflict and inflicting pain on each other takes me back to mythology and how we learn from that, from our elders and their old teachings and the doctrines surrounding these teachings. It's spiritual. And I'm not so sure if today in modern times do we grasp the true meaning of what is spiritual, what is spirituality. And you know as well as I do from our old people's point of view, everything is spiritual. So the moment of birth is a spiritual occurrence. We're brought into the world. It's a miracle. Also, death, my elders taught me, is also a spiritual part of life when we depart from this realm. Now, that's easy to understand, that those are events that are very spiritual. Now, what about every other moment in between those two? Are they not equally as spiritual to have every day, to be able to have this experience and share it, to be connected to not only each other but all of our surroundings, and to learn that connection and to truly embrace, to become one with the universe, as it were? That notion is very true in a quantum sense. And our people understood outer space, mm-hmm. inner space, DNA, these different concepts that are somewhat viewed as modern. I think in our spirituality, we already had a grip on that and understood that. And those notions have been passed on from generation to generation. And we were fortunate enough to be born into it to actually understand these statements. And it's not for everybody. And I know, Woody, you talk about getting frustrated, and I agree. You know, and you look around and you wonder, why don't these people get it?
Yeah.
Right? And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why right now.
Yeah.
It's because they weren't chosen. But you were, and that's the difference, and that's why you've been blessed and why you have a responsibility and so driven to share and transmit the truth as much as you can. It becomes a conviction because of that very spirituality of wanting the truth and being real, your sense of justice and your understanding of our history and our identity is very rare. And I really grateful that we did encounter and we share a lot of the same views. And of course, we come from the same kind of background.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about spirituality, is how people take things for granted. Just taking a breath, that's a miracle in itself. But we don't even stop and think about it. We take it for granted. When we talk about our spirituality, like, for example, in Haida, when we talk about, we'll say the most supreme of all existences, we call that's the big spirit in the air. Air is invisible. So this thing exists nowhere, in nothing, but brought everything into being. And the one that we deal with, we call it the big spirit in the atmosphere. We can sense its presence. It's so big it fills every corner of the universe and every fiber of my being. So it doesn't matter if I believe it, because it is. And it's so big that I don't have to worship it. I don't have to bow my head. I don't have to take off my hat. I don't have to say what a miserable, pathetic little creature I am. No. I'm something that was created that's as good as anything else. I never say I'm as good as anything else. What I'm really saying is there's nothing better than me. And one of the things that happened is the non-indigenous world, I'll put it that way, couldn't describe these things, so they had to create another language called mathematics. So they could find the existence of black holes, whereas we already know about it. We have a concept in Haida that translates to movement without motion. And Leroy Little Bear, well, Dr. Leroy Little Bear, said, up a thing with a whole bunch of people, scientists and First Nations people, to talk about indigenous science, our understanding of the universe, our understanding of the world. Because these physicists were concerned that they had no idea where their science was going to go from where they are now. So we started talking about these concepts, and as it was sort of difficult because sometimes you don't want to tell somebody that is not on the inside. You just don't want to tell them. In fact, that's something that's going to happen here in December. This Hopi named Victor Masayepsa, they convened a meeting in Arizona of the traditional timekeepers, the ones who are the keepers of the calendars and all those things. And he's coming here to Vancouver, and from what I understand, he's worked out some agreement with Margot Kane for Full Circle Productions. It's working out a way to screen what they've done. And I was supposed to be a part of it and some people from Mexico, but we weren't able to get there. So I'm really curious to see what they came up with because our calendars are not like these ones that tell you how many days you got to work to get a day off, because it's all time is money. Whereas for us, it isn't. In our histories, we don't record the wars. We don't record the royalty, this sort of thing. What our history records is our interactions with the natural world. How do we fit into the rhythm of life? What happens when we get out of it? How do we get back into it? Rather than how do we change the weather? How do we change everything to fit what we want? And I think this is what's going to be the real downfall of most of the human race, because they're messing with stuff like here in BC, an apple grower has changed one of the genes of his apples, so when you cut the apple and leave it sitting out, it won't turn brown. He can't leave anything alone. They changed the genes in that apple. Now they're mixing some kind of genes with Atlantic salmon, some kind of an eel, to make them bigger or something. I don't know. And that's happening up in your territory, too, isn't it? The salmon farms? Well, how many do they have up there, do you know?
I have no idea, but, you know, it is a concern, of course, and to those who are aware, I mean, I think most people aren't really aware, or are they really concerned? I mean, that's what I might have to ask to answer that question. I'd have to know, does anybody really care?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we need to have none.
Because, I mean, I'm sure that if people cared more, this kind of thing wouldn't be happening. Or are we that trained to be so generic and turn into nobodies that don't have any opinions, don't have any say or no sense of reality, really, and just think everything's cool and want to make sure that, you know, they have their comfort zone and don't really have to worry about anything. And I think that's what's blindsided society today is that they want to feel that everything's okay. And it really isn't.
Yeah. For those of you who just sort of maybe just tuned in, this is a new program. I'm one of the co-hosts, Woody Morrison, and my co-host, Gennargio Sullivan, isn't here. She got stuck in the traffic, and she's been trying to call me, but I can't answer my phone because I'm here in the broadcast booth. But anyway, we're at CITR 101.9 FM here in the beautiful northeastern Pacific coastline of the Musqueam Territory. That ought to mess you up. Do you ever stop? What's your name, our operator?
Oh, Brad.
What?
Brad.
Brad?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're here to turn the knobs and push the buttons and keep the thing flying. Do you have any music over there that you might want to play?
Well, this Robin put up some PSAs.
Go ahead, put one on then, because we need to take a break so I can answer my phone.
Yeah. Gotta catch my breath. Yeah, holy.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Station tours start at noon, and we are located on the second floor of the sub.
The wind blew some luck in my direction. I caught it in my hands today. I finally made a tricky French connection.
Witnesses, art and Canada's Indian residential schools. An exhibition featuring artists from across Canada who have directly experienced residential schools or are witnesses to its ongoing impact. Programming will include guided tours, lectures, artist talks, performances, and online programs. From September 6th to December 1st at the Belkin Gallery, Main Mall, UBC. All are welcome. Admission is free. For more information, visit belkin.ubc.ca.
One campus, one station, over 40 live broadcasts. Tune in every weekend as CITR provides live coverage of UBC varsity sports. With over 40 live internet and radio broadcasts in men's and women's hockey, basketball, and volleyball, CITR is your voice for Thunderbird athletics.
Takes on the University of Lethbridge in their first of two weekend games before the winter break.
Thanks to Sky High gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge or off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For
more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
I own my 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 media.
The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members. Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
You really want to know what love is?
Yeah. Yes, tell us.
More than anything in the world, Ron.
Well, it's really quite simple. It's kind of like... Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night? When everything's a little clearer in the light of day, and we know the night is always gonna be here anyway. Thinking of you's working up my appetite, looking forward to a little afternoon delight. Rubbing sticks and stones together, making sparks ignite, and the thought of loving you is getting so exciting. Sky rockets in flight. Boo! Afternoon delight.
Do you know what love is? I do. It's CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
You guys have it, I think.
Afternoon delight.
There are two things I will carry in my pockets at the end.
Yeah, you guys were always the cool radio station with the, like, fun magazine and everything.
That's right, Discorder.
Always wishes we had, yeah. We always wanted a magazine like that back in the day.
Yeah.
My campus radio roots go deep.
We just actually reformatted the Discorder, so it's now in this new cool zine size, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, that was always the cool thing when it came into the station. We're always like, oh man, this is so cool. How do we get this going? And it's really cool that it's all, like, even sponsored and everything.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's really fun. This is Sasha Bellot, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
We're back. This is Woody Morrison with Language to Language, and our guest here is Bo Dick, and he's got to run now, so he just wants to say so long to all of you.
Okay, yeah, well, thanks, Woody. I really appreciate having the opportunity to spend some time with you, of course, but be broadcasting is an adventure for me, so this is fun, and I look forward to actually working with you in the future, and hopefully... get some more messages out there, and I wish you well and many blessings, and you and the crew here, and hope Gunarji makes it through the traffic all right, and I look forward to seeing her again soon too. So I wanted to say thank you, and I'll have to be on my way. I have an appointment soon, so again.
Okay, well, Bo's here as an artist in residence with Fine Arts Department here at UBC, where he talks about culture, all the different layers of culture, and he brings a whole long history with him and a whole worldview that most people are never exposed to. But tomorrow's his last day here, so he's got another commitment, I guess, over at the First Nations House of Learning.
Well, I'm heading there now to sort things out for a future event, but... my last gig tomorrow is with the social worker working department, and I'm eager to speak with them. I think a lot of what I touch on is pertinent to the work that they're going to be doing, and anxious to actually share what I can to give them tools to help, and that's our responsibility, right? And got to keep working. The show must go on. So thanks, Kennedy.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and... So I guess I can get out of the way here so you can make a run for the door.
Okay, well, see you again soon.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to have some dead air here, but maybe it's dead anyway with me talking. Something I want to be doing with this program, too, is a lot of it is to be able to introduce people with different languages so that you can hear what their languages sound like and different ways in which we greet each other, not only with our First Nations languages, but with some of the other languages, too. And I'm presently president of the board for an organization called the Vancouver Society of Storytelling. And one of the things that we talked about doing is in June, the Storytelling Society is doing a storytelling festival. And so what we're probably going to be doing here in the very near future is bringing on a storyteller, and they'll tell one or two stories, and this is the way we'll vet our storytellers, so that we can have people out there who will say, okay, this is a storyteller we want to have for the festival. So we'll be doing that, and also we want to get into some very simple greetings in our different languages. For example, one of the ways in which we say hello in Haida, the simplest way is oi. Oi, sort of like saying oil without the L, oi. Another simple way, the Masset people say dungwala. They say dungwala, whereas in the north we'd say dunkala. We'd sort of cut it a little bit short, but what it's asking is, are you good? And so you can either say ang, or from Masset is anga. And if you're just fine, you say di lagen. But it's kind of a funny way. You've got to tighten your abdomen and hold the air in and push it out when you say la, di lagen. And it's... Or if you're not feeling so well, the answer no is ge. It almost sounds like somebody saying, what are you, goofy? Ge. You're gay? No, it means no. So you can make some mistakes with the language. If you become a little bit more formal, then people in Skidigit, the southern Haidas, they'll say Sinodang Haidang, Haidang, I think is how they pronounce that. I'll have to get some clarification on it. But the Massets on Haida Gwaii, they'll say Gasino Dang Haidang, Haidang, Gasino Dang Haidang. And we're from the north, we say, we don't put that extra G syllable in there, we say Sino Dang Haidang. Masset, Gasino Dang Haidang. Skidigit, Sino Dang Haidang. So it's almost all the same. The Skidigit people in Haida, we refer to them as Dlayu Hatai. It's the Round Rock Beach people. And the people from Masset, we call Ho Hatai. Ho is a big bay, so it's a big bay people. And those of us from the Alaska side are called Kis Hatai. Kis is something very old, but it's also refers to some lava rocks that are fused together, so it sort of indicates something that's a complete unit by itself. But we were never what you would call a nation. A nation is a political organization, whereas we were never that. In fact, our name for ourselves, when we refer to a Haida nation, I guess you might have people, is Kuala. Kuala. And you're either from the eagle or from the raven. So for me, I'm from the eagle segment of the human population. Whereas my father Well, we have different ways. Up in the north, we use the word tzak, which we borrowed from the Athabascan peoples, that indicates the bald eagle when its head is white. If we use the word hoot, then we're referring to that eagle when it's immature. It's before its feathers turn to black, a real dark color, and the head turns white. So in the north, we say tzak hat ai, where the Masset people and the Skidigit people use the word hoot, whereas they use the word huye for raven, so do we, but we also use what we borrowed from the Tlingit people, which is yash. So although there's some minor differences, I'm not fluent in Haida. I'm not even close to it. I grew up hearing it. I used to speak it as a child. But then I got sent away to school, and then I served in the U.S. military. So by the time I got home, I was 25 years old and not entirely rational most of the time. So it's been kind of a long road of learning, to getting back to learning some of these things. What we want to be able to do is, like I say, is just to greet somebody, to say hello, and to ask... When we thank someone, there's many different ways in Haida that we thank someone, but the simplest one is two syllables, ho-a. Not ho-a, but ho-a. When you hear somebody just say ho-a, that's sort of like when I say thank you to someone and they say no problem. Why should it be a problem? I don't understand. So I think when you say ho-a, it's just a bit more intimate. So, if you want to say thank you to anyone in Haida, just say hawa, hawa. And then when you're leaving, we never say goodbye. Even when a person is dying, we say, who's dunk king song? Who's dunk king song? I'll see you again. But in a way it was described to me, is what you're really saying is long ago, someday I'll see you. And so what that means is if we're, like Bo and I are sitting here talking, and he's leaving, and I say to him, I'll see you again. What I'm saying is that someday in the indefinite future, we'll see each other again. And when we do, I'll have this image of you as how you look now, and I'll see the new image. So long ago, someday I'll see you. Because we're not born alone. We don't live alone. We don't die alone. When a person is kai, when they come into being, when they're born, a spirit comes with that person. And if the parents will pay close attention, that child will identify that spirit. And once that spirit's identified, then the parents and the rest focus on raising that child to avoid making the mistakes that the other person had made in their lifetime. And so this voice, this little voice, stays with them all their life. And when they leave to go home, it goes with them. So we're never alone. And then when we were born, used to be one of the grandfather would take the newborn child outside on a starlit night and hold that child up to the sky and tell the stars, this is your new grandchild. Watch out for them. And then grandchild, that's all your relatives. And so as you go through your life and you start feeling small and insignificant, the world is just overwhelming you, you go out and you look up at the stars and you take your hands and sweep it across the sky and say, that's all my relatives. Now I'm as big as anything. So never make yourself feel small. Never tell yourself, I'm just as good as somebody else. Always tell yourself, nobody's better than me. And so this is, people get into this humility mode to where each one tries to show that they're more humble than the other. It's almost like saying, well, I'm the tallest midget in the world. You know, there's no way to measure that, because at what point do you stop being a midget? At what point do you stop being humble and now you're boasting? So instead, we don't go boasting because my stature is determined by how tall I am, not how small I make you look. And so this is the same way when we talk about the power of the creating, Shungsh Anwai, the big spirit in the atmosphere. It's so big that it doesn't need to make us humans look be small so it can be bigger. So we don't worship it. We don't bow our heads. We don't do all these Christian rituals which are based on, if you listen carefully to the language when they use the word the Lord, they're talking about a king, an earthly king, that you got to bow your head to or to cut your head off. And so you have to speak in hushed tones in the presence of the king. All sorts of things. You don't make jokes about the king. Whereas, you know, with our spirituality, we joke about a lot of things. We tell funny stories, too, about the things that happen. So in our system, like I said, Shuksh Anwai is so big that it fills not only the entire universe, but every fiber of my being. So it's a way of saying God is right here, inside me. I'm not God. I'm not that big power. But it's in me. And it doesn't matter if I believe it, because it is. And there's no way I can turn my back on it, because it's everywhere. And so I have but one responsibility, one overall responsibility, and that's to live my life knowing I'm not in control. And if I know I'm not in control, I'm not going to try to control other people. Our word for a chief in Haida, Nang Itlakdash, that's a big boss who can't give orders. Our chiefs didn't order anybody to do anything. You followed that person because of the person's examples and the way that person lived. So anyway, thank you for listening today, and I see on the clock that we just ran out of time. So we'll see you next Thursday at 2 o'clock. Ho'a.
CITR 101.9 FM. It's what the whales are talking about.
There are a lot of things you're not allowed to grow in your basement in Vancouver. Vegetables are not one of those things.
SPEC and the YWCA are excited to introduce the Urban Farmer Field School. The UFFS provides hands-on training in sustainable agriculture, small farm business planning, and community food action.
Class instructors are experts in urban agriculture, food systems, and plant mind control. The integrated curriculum is divided between classroom theory and practical learning.
For more information, please visit the interweb and search for Farmer Field School at spec.bc.ca.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to this special sports update on UBC's Varsity Athletics. Normally, the 3:30 program, Thunderbird Eye, is our weekly update on UBC Varsity Sports, but today we have a special additional feature right before we get to our weekly update on UBC Thunderbirds Varsity teams. As you may or may not know, the UBC Athletics Department is currently undergoing a internal review process, officially titled the Sports Targeting Review, in which structural reform could happen to many of the UBC Thunderbirds' current varsity teams. And this will be a structural review to perhaps change the varsity designation of certain currently existing varsity teams, or to